each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Welcome, everyone. God bless you for tuning in for the Winds of Change. And those are all the history fans that accompany me here to the Winds of Change, you know, fans, people yearning.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's right. Those are all the people that love on the Winds of Change when we dive into history, because we want to know who we are. We want to know who we are. I think one of the great crises of today is a crisis of identity. We as a individual, we as a collective, we as a nation, we need to know who we are. And history helps us know who we are. One layer of people affects the other. Generation is laid upon another. And today is the feast of St. Ignatius of Loyola. Feast of St. Ignatius of Loyola. So we're going to dive into some history. It's very fascinating. And you can't really know the history. You can't really know who St. Ignatius of Loyola was, which is to say, oh yeah, there we go. Well, thank you. Hello there.
Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Well, I'm going to set it at 1767, okay? 1767. I was starting to say before Peabody jumped in there that we can't really understand the Jesuits unless we know the Protestant Reformation. And, of course, that's in the 1500s because St. Ignatius made a major contribution. He went through his conversion in the midst of the great turmoil of the, as Warren Carroll, the great Catholic historian, says, the cleaving of Christianity, the cutting it into two, which soon became three, which soon became four, which soon became five, which soon became thousands, because what I'm referring to is the separation between Catholic Christianity and Protestant Christianity. But the date which we're going to dive into is 1767, which is, of course, to put in the context of our American mind, it's just a little before the American Revolution, you know, when that world was, when the British colonies were growing a little bit restless. They were still part of His Majesty's Kingdom, made a bit famous by the new play, Hamilton, with a strange and comical, almost sad figure painted of King George III. He plays a little part in our story today, but more of a tangential part. But America itself is part of the story, and it helps us know who we are as a nation, and it helps us understand where some difficulties and problems might lie to help us uncover a better and a clearer path to a brighter future, shall we say, okay? So, but that date, 1767, stands out because that's when a Catholic pope. Well, are there any other kind of popes? Well, maybe. Maybe there are. But anyways, the Pope Clement XIV issued a document that declared the Jesuits to be no more. This is the famous story of the Jesuits' oppression. And, of course, we can't start with 1767. We can't start with Clement XIV. We got to go back a bit and build this story up. And then we have to fast forward a bit. Before I get into the lurid details of a stretch of about 75 to 100 years, and again, we'll put it in the context of the colonial American time frame. But of course, what was going on in colonial America was not much of concern to most of the folks in Europe. What was going on in Europe was the tremendous, we sometimes even call it the Hundred Years' War, which is really a war between Catholicism and Protestantism. I'm sorry to say, but that's how I'm going to introduce this to you, my listeners, even though when I was a young whippersnapper in school...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Well, I'm going to have to wrinkle it a number of more times because I remember learning about some of these, the Seven Years' Wars, the Hundred Years' Wars, and I never... It was never presented to me as I'm presenting it to you right now, and I'm presenting to you right now as that Hundred Years' War, a century of battles between nations emerging. Well, got to be careful. I use the word nation. Nations were just emerging. They were kingdoms. First there were kingdoms, then there were nations, and the difference between... it begins... where shall I begin now? You can't, that was little Lisa Simpson, our great little philosopher from the Simpsons there. And she says it begins, but let me say this to you, my friends, as a amateur Catholic historian, as I am, and trying to make all of you, my wonderful listeners, into greater devotees of Catholic history. You can't start anywhere. Sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? Whenever you dive into history, you got to start somewhere, right? Well, it's true. You got to start somewhere. But as soon as you start somewhere, you will realize that the place where you started isn't the beginning. You're going to start somewhere, but then you're going to say, what happened before that? And that is a beautiful insight into... it's a Catholic insight that says the whole of history is crucial, and to be stooped in history is to be Catholic in a very powerful way, because you're always going to ask, what started this? What was before this? What happened to these people before they did this that made them do that? And of course, our Catholic theology, and again, as I've referred to this before, Pope John Paul II's theology of the body, of course, is monumental in its helping us to understand the beauty of the sacredness of marriage, the marital act, and the sacredness of marriage, and the reasons behind the controversial teachings that are so often maligned by Catholics and non-Catholics alike about our official Catholic teachings. But Pope John Paul II's theology of the body is also beautiful in that it sets down a different way of approaching history. I've mentioned this before. In John Paul's theology of the body, he says you have to divide time into three segments. And of course... anyone who doesn't have the Catholic mindset will say, well, I divide history into segments, maybe not three. I could do four or something. You can say ancients, ancient, medieval, modern, we could say pre-Jesus, Old Testament, New Testament, Roman Empire times, medieval times, early modern times, contemporary times, okay? Those are divisions of history, right? Well, they certainly are, and that's valid, very important. But John Paul's insight is even better because it would include those, but all of those are included in the second epoch of time, which he calls historical man. Historical man, all the stories of history that we need to appreciate and understand. But before historical man is the Garden of Eden. Pre-historical man, in the sense that Adam and Eve were real. There was a human history before the fall. And that fall of Adam and Eve, taken as a significant event in human history, is hardly ever taken by historians today. But,
you just wrinkled my brain.
That is a brain ring, because we all probably believe in original sin. Whenever we talk about baptism, we say right away, what does baptism do? Oh, it washes away the stain of original sin. Great, that's a good thing to say. But hidden in that doctrine is the idea that God made the world beautiful and perfect when he made it. And all the bad stuff didn't come in until after Adam and Eve disobeyed God, after the fall. Okay, so the first epoch of time is the Garden of Eden. The second epoch of time is historical man, which you can divide up into a whole bunch of ways, and we're going to dive into that 18th century there. The third epoch of time is eschatological time. In other words, heaven. But heaven in itself, time is going to be so much different. We enter into the presence of God. God is eternal. God doesn't have a yesterday, today, and a tomorrow. Everything is present to God. So if we're entering into the presence of God, everything will be today. There will be no yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I can't explain that. Don't ask me to explain it, but that is part of our vision. That is part of our supernatural view of existence. And whenever we contemplate death, and whenever one of our loved ones passes, we think about heaven. Indeed. Let's go back to the Jesuits. We got St. Ignatius was a soldier. He was from a fairly wealthy, somewhat noble Basque family from Spain. And he goes off and fights in wars, which probably were the many wars that Spain engaged in between Spain and France, especially as they fought over northern Italy. And Spain also had to try to put out fires in Germany. And then there was also the battles with the Moors. St. Ignatius, being a strong fighter, goes through somewhat of a huge conversion. He was injured. He walked with a limp for the rest of his life. In his recovering days, he wanted to read some great stories of knights in shining armor, the glorious battles of knights and soldiers of old. The place he was resting didn't really have them. It was a Dominican house, and they had the New Testament, and they had Lives of the Saints, which he read and devoured, and began to think, maybe God is calling me somewhere else. And it was a tremendously tumultuous time for him. And he was questioned, ridiculed. He was, I really think the wisdom of St. Ignatius can't be understood except in the context of what was going on in the church vis-a-vis the Protestant Reformation. There was something going on in the people that followed Martin Luther and were ready, willing, and able to destroy much of what they thought of as the church, especially the bones, the skeleton of the church, the sacraments, the heart and soul, and what was going on in their personal lives, especially their personal struggles with purity. To be perfectly honest, their struggles with faithfulness and their marriage situations, and so realizing how difficult those were, and most likely being tempted in many ways himself, he was almost ready to give up until the Lord really touched his heart and gave him a heart of a soldier for the kingdom, a heart of the soldier for the Catholic Church that was so representative of what needed, what people need in their lives. Okay, Nick, we'll take a quick break here. But again, before I get to the nitty-gritty, a blow-by-blow of some of those 7,500 years, I want to share some of the major themes that I want you to keep in mind as we go back into history on this Feast of St. Ignatius of Loyola, and investigate the Jesuit suppression. So stay tuned, my friends. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
This is a prayer request from Winds of Change. We are asking for prayers for our St. Stan's parishioner, Juan Martinez's mother, Maria del Rosario Hernandez, who was just diagnosed with brain cancer. We truly believe in the power of prayer. Let us unite in prayer for her and for the entire family as they begin a challenging journey. Thank you. Cruise on over to St. Stan's August Fun Fest, Saturday, August 25th from 3 until 8 p.m. Bring your family, bring your friends for great ethnic foods, children's games, prizes, inflatables, music, raffles, and a dump tank. The proceeds will go to benefit St. Stan's Parish and School. The St. Stan's August Fun Fest is easy to find. Just one block north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy Expressway. Join the fun Saturday, August 25th from 3 until 8 p.m. The St. Stan's August Fun Fest.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change.
On AM 750, WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. Father Tom Coyes here. And we're, of course, trying to learn something from history so that we can apply it to our lives today and the world around us to understand who we are in a better way. And on this Feast of St. Ignatius of Loyola, I'm trying to recover. There we go. That's the reward room. That's the reward room. And makes me feel good that Nick wanted to put me in the reward room instead of the punishment room. I don't want to go into the punishment room. None of us should want to go there. But okay, anyways, I'm getting off track. But I do think, let me throw this out too, and why part of the reason why I wanted to tackle this topic too is because when I look back at history and I see incredible accomplishments of so many Jesuits, starting with Ignatius, of course, I have this disconnect. Sorry to say, I have a disconnect because the most of the Jesuits that I know today are so different than the founding fathers' spirit and pastoral approach, as it were. And some of my favorite Jesuits. One of my favorite Jesuits is the priest Father John Hardin, who passed away. And sorry to say that Father Hardin, in his ministry, when he was teaching and trying to strengthen people's faith and explain things and explain theology and history and all that, he was quite maligned by many of his Jesuit confreres. This is not a unique situation. So be that as may, when I want to share this with you, because I think this helps not only with just my trouble with the Jesuits of today, but it's a good thing to realize when you have trouble with someone or some group, and I'm sure we all have. I have this individual I have trouble with, especially if it's someone you want to not have trouble with. If you're in war and you're being told to fight an enemy and you got to destroy the enemy before they destroy you, you're not, this may not apply. But for all those people we have trouble with who we want to be in good stead with, we don't want to be in trouble with, there's a little lesson that I want to share and that I think it's been taught to me here. And that is, when there's this group of people that you don't like, try to understand them better. Try to get to know their history. Try to get to know what they've been through. And it helps. It may not solve the present conflict you have with them, but it does give you the kind of patience and the kind of a heart that you would need in order to deal with them better. And I think that the story of the suppression of the Jesuits is the part of getting to understand the Jesuits of today, because it was a huge part of their story. It flows into the American story. And if we don't understand, if we don't grasp that, we don't understand them as well. We'll come back to that. But there's four major themes that I see emerging from the story of the suppression of the Jesuits. And again, this is 200 years after St. Ignatius, 150 as it were. But the first question, obviously, is why were the Jesuits suppressed? Here they're pretty successful in terms of a lot of vocations, a lot of priests and brothers and lay people associated with the newfound order of side of Jesus, the Jesuits. So obviously, a question arises, well, why? So, of course, there's always a multiple facets. I'm definitely a budding phenomenologist in this sense, that when asked a big question, I always like to understand and unearth the many facets of the problem. The bigger the question, the more assured we can be that there are many facets to the problem. And that's a 25-cent way of describing what phenomenology does in terms of our thinking. It's a philosophical school of thought that's not satisfied with just getting the one reason. I think that's a mistake a lot of people make. I'm a bit of, if you're a Winds of Change radio listener, you're probably a radio person like myself. And when people call in the various talk show, mostly about politics and but about other psychological things and what have you, sometimes church politics, what have you, people are often looking for the answer, in the sense that there's one cause to this that's happening. There's one reason, and we come to it and we look for it. It's kind of like looking for the Holy Grail or looking for the Fountain of Youth. We're looking for that one problem. But let's try not to do that, my friends. Let's look for many facets of the problem. Let's look for the phenomenology of it. We have to walk around the the scenario and see, here's a good point, here's another good point. They all come together to make reality. I think that's a very wise way of trying to cipher things, trying to analyze things. So one, in trying to answer the question, why were the Jesuits suppressed? You probably won't hear this, but I'm going to tell it to you. There's two major reasons why, I truly believe. One was a debate between making money through emerging markets and a concern for the salvation of souls. What I mean by that is, as the Jesuits tried to, they were formed by St. Ignatius to battle the Protestant Reformation. They didn't do such a good job because in that department, because they certainly did good. They saved a lot of people from the errors of Protestantism, but they didn't save a lot of others, of course. Protestantism gained a real strong footing in Europe, and it still obviously exists today. But be that as it may, another thing that they did, are so famous for in their history, is the baptizing of so many Indians in the New World. They were incredible missionaries sent to the New World. It's almost as if, okay, like so many other people looked at the New World, Europe failed us. We're going to shake our dust from this little town. Of course, Europe can hardly be called a little town, but anyways, to borrow the phrase from the Gospels, and then we're going to go someplace else. And they went someplace else to the New World, and they found all these native Indians living in the New World, and the Jesuits started baptizing and converting them. Of course, in the process, a number of them were killed by the people they were trying to help. Sad part of the human story. Anyways, there were a lot of people that were very much concerned about the New World, not in terms of salvation of souls, but in terms of the emerging market. There is a lot of new resources, gold and silver, and them their hills. And especially with slave labor, you can make a lot of good textiles and all the rest, and send money back to Europe. And so that was happening. But the Jesuits were trying to tell the merchants and the powers that be that you can't enslave these people. Don't treat them as animals. They're human beings, and we want to treat them as children of God. You've probably heard of the movie The Mission. This is a big part of what I'm talking about. The Mission depicted the difficulty within the New World, and there are two Jesuits, one that was more conservative, and we could say that word in, although it doesn't mean the same back then as it does now, but he was a priest that was willing to lay down his life. He said, "Let's put our trust in the Lord. Let's pray. We're not gonna fight as the Europeans came to take over their villages. Reductions is the word that Jesuits often used for their little missions, and so there's the famous scene at the end of that movie when." The one priest is walking through the battlefields holding the Blessed Sacrament, and a number of the Indians are following them, putting their faith in the Lord that he will miraculously save them, but unfortunately they're killed. Then there's the Jesuits, who are more the liberation theologians in the movie. He's willing to find rifles and guns, and we're going to fight this out. So that's the era I'm talking about. And so the point for our consideration today in terms of finding an answer to the question of why the Jesuits were suppressed, we have to see that they were an obstacle in the quest for riches in the New World by trying to keep slavery and being Native American Indians being treated like slaves. And that's one thing. But another thing that the Jesuits, there was a perfect storm of things going. They were also getting in trouble back in Europe because many of the Jesuits, became confessors of many of the kings, queens, princes, and princesses, and all the other nobility. And one of the things the Jesuits kept on saying when they were confessors is stop sleeping around, to be perfectly blunt. And when you tell powerful, rich kings, noblemen, and princes, and all the rest, you can't sleep around so much as you do. This mistress has got to go. They tend to get upset. They tend to get mad. And so these two things were going on with the early Jesuits, and it did get them in trouble. Another theme that we should have to keep in mind is the full context of the history of the time, where, again, a lot of my information is coming from Warren Carroll, who wrote magnificent five-volume history of the church. And he calls the suppression of the Jesuits a fire alarm in the night, warning Europe of the coming of a man-made apocalypse. The suppression of the Jesuits was a fire alarm in the night, warning Europe of the coming of a man-made apocalypse. What's the apocalypse he's talking about? He's talking about the French Revolution, the era of terror. Voltaire and Robespierre and all these guys that just came right after him. What happened to the Jesuits was groundwork for what was to happen to Catholicism in general throughout Europe, especially in France, but otherwise. Okay, so I got through two of my major themes, and Nick wants me to take another little break, so I'm always a faithful and professional radio guest host here. I will listen and obey. Obedience, one of the Jesuit virtues, we'll find out. So I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Cruise on over to St. Stan's August Fun Fest, Saturday, August 25th, from 3 until 8 p.m. Bring your family, bring your friends for great ethnic foods, children's games, prizes, inflatables, music, raffles, and a dump tank. The proceeds will go to benefit St. Stan's Parish and School. The St. Stan's August Fun Fest is easy to find. Just one block north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy Expressway. Join the fun Saturday, August 25th from 3 until 8 p.m. The St. Stan's August Fun Fest.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Cruise on over to St. Stan's August Fun Fest, Saturday, August 25th, from 3 until 8 p.m. Bring your family, bring your friends for great ethnic foods, children's games, prizes, inflatables, music, raffles, and a dump tank. The proceeds will go to benefit St. Stan's Parish and School. The St. Stan's August Fun Fest is easy to find. Just one block north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy Expressway. Join the fun Saturday, August 25th from 3 until 8 p.m. The St. Stan's August Fun Fest.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the 18th century. We are here on Winds of Change, but our minds are back in the 18th century and the time of the American colonies as they're getting ready to break away from Britain. But we're back in Europe, and most people in Europe didn't have the American colonies on their brain so much. What was going on was something called the Jesuit suppression, and since today's the feast of St. Ignatius of Loyola, we're doing this. And it helps me understand the Jesuits because, as I said earlier, since I don't have glowing admiration of the Jesuits as for today, I need to understand them to relate to them better, to have the patience with them. And I think that appreciating the Jesuit suppression of the 18th centuries, 1770, thereabouts, we can see that they got into a lot of big trouble. But even the Pope, they were instituted to be the Pope's right-hand man kind of thing, and they were constantly defending the papacy and Catholicism in general because the papacy was at the heart of the Protestant revolution. And to be slapped down by the ones you're, by the institution you're trying to help save, it's hard to find the words for it. It's wicked. It's difficult. It's hard. It's life-changing, as it were. And so as the Jesuits kind of came to the United States and sort of got their bearings again and had some free soil on which to work their craft, as it were, it changed them in a very radical way. And so they just stopped doing, they're not doing now what they did before, and namely standing up for the Native Americans, the exploited poor, in contrast to the emerging tycoons, as it were. And certainly their in-your-face attitude about marriage fidelity and everything has taken a real back door, back window, back area, back location in their modus operandi. So I'm going to read to you, before I get to a couple other major themes that are part of the story of the Jesuit suppression, which helps explain them more today. There is a powerful, incredible, you would call it an admonition, a rebuking, a criticizing on the part of a cardinal toward the Pope. There's a famous, well, not so famous. He's there. He would have been famous if you would have known him, if you were alive at the time, but now his name is kind of lost to history, unfortunately. But it was a cardinal from Paris by the name of Beaumont, Christophe Beaumont, Cardinal Chris Beaumont. He was, he really appreciated the Jesuits for all they were doing. And he took their sides in a big way. And eventually, there were a few popes that Pope Benedict XIV, he appreciated the Jesuits, defended them half-heartedly, but he did defend them. Pope Clement XIII really defended him, especially at the end of his life. But then Pope Clement XIV, so Pope Clement XIII and Pope Clement XIV are the key ones here. Pope Clement XIV is the one who caved and then signs the suppression. And as this cardinal from Paris hears and realizes that the Pope is most likely going to sign a cease and desist order for the Jesuits, he was like terrified. He thought, this is terrible. Many of the royalty of France, especially in the House of Bourbon, they were very much anti-Jesuits. So next time you go down to New Orleans and you you have all that hedonistic fun on Bourbon Street, know that you are keeping alive the memory of the Royal House of Bourbon that really hated the Jesuits because the Jesuits were in their face, especially about marital loyalty and sexual purity, and you don't get rich quick on the backs of slaves. So hopefully that will take away some of your fun if you're having all that fun down in New Orleans. The bad fun. There's good fun and there's bad fun, but there's definitely a lot of bad fun that's associated with New Orleans and Bourbon Street. Do you get my drift? Okay, let's move on. I need to share with you this criticism that Cardinal Beaumont writes to Pope Clement XIV, the guy who suppressed the Jesuits in the end. And So the Pope tells all the cardinals to, you know, get rid of their Jesuits. And here's where I'm going to pick up. Pope Beaumont says, to charge myself with the task you wish me to perform would be to inflict a serious injury on religion, as well as to cast an aspersion on the learning and integrity of the prelates who laid before the king their approval of the very points that are now condemned by this brief. Cardinal Beaumont is referring to the fact that the cardinals of France, or I don't know, bishops, I think, the cardinals and bishops, the hierarchy of France, there were 50, there was a vote. Should we, do we back the Jesuits or do we not back the Jesuits? And when they were going to vote on that, they were not only voting pro-Jesuits or anti-Jesuits, they were voting pro-King Louis XV or anti-King Louis XV. So it was a double-edged sword, of course, because guess what? Louis XV was anti-Jesuit. He was sometimes forced to say nice things about them, but and because of Jesuit confessors calling him on the carpet of some of his mistresses and have you, he had a hard time with the Jesuits. But the Cardinal Beaumont is here referring to the fact that when they took a vote, it was 51-1. 51 of the bishops were in favor of the Jesuits. Only one stood up and said, out with the Jesuits. So the cardinal is saying to the Pope, hey, you're missing something here. We're going with this, talk about census fidelium, right? The sense of the people. What about the sense of the those bishops there? So the king, both in France and especially also the king of Portugal and the king of Spain all did this. They said, we got to get rid of the Jesuits for the sake of peace, for the sake of peace. And Cardinal Beaumont puts his finger right on it. It reminds me something very much about what I know about the Civil War, American Civil War, too, because he says, for what is the peace that is incompatible with this society? The question is startling in the reflection it evokes, for we fail to understand how such a motive had the power to induce your holiness to adopt a measure which is so hazardous, so dangerous, so prejudicial. In a word, what the brief, and he's talking about the brief that's the preliminary feeler for the Jesuit suppression, what the brief designates as peace is not peace. It is precisely that peace against which the Jesuits in the four corners of the world have declared an active, a vigorous, and a bloody warfare, which they have carried to the limit, and in which they have received the greatest success. To put an end to that peace, they have devoted their talents. They have undergone pain and suffering. Now let's stop there for a second. Remember, we're listening to a cardinal who's attacking the Pope because the Pope is ready to suppress the Jesuits. And he's speaking about the zeal of the Jesuits to, listen to this, put an end to that peace. That phrase must drive our modern ears wild. Wait a minute. The Jesuits are waging a war to end that peace? Are the Jesuits fighting to end peace? You got to get deeper into the story to appreciate what the phrase, that peace, is referring to. In the ears and the eyes and the bones and the very soul of the royalty that's getting rich, that peace can be translated the money coming in from the new world and the peace I have with my mistresses because my wife is no longer pleasing to me, etc. And so They're waging a war to end the kind of peace that is bought through sin. You hear what I'm saying? it's the eternal question, and it reminds me of the Civil War, because there was the movement called the Peace Movement of the North during our American Civil War, which is very similar to this, because the Peace Movement of the North during the American Civil War was, we got to stop this fighting for the sake of peace. And Abraham Lincoln heard that and says, well, yeah, we'll stop the wars, we could stop the battles, but it's not the peace of, it's not peace for the slaves. It's not peace for our whole country, as it were, both the unity of the nation, as well as the slavery issue was front and center. So might be peace for you because you don't have to go to battle to fight, but it ain't peace for the slaves who have to then will stay slaves. So the very phrase peace needs to be appreciated in a deep, deep way. Okay, so we're going to take another break here. There's so much more to get to. And today's Tuesday, so I'm going to be back here tomorrow, my friends. I'm afraid we're just going to have to continue. There's too much more of wisdom to gain from the study of Catholic history. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
This is a prayer request from Winds of Change. We are asking for prayers for our St. Stan's parishioner, Juan Martinez's mother, Maria del Rosario Hernandez, who was just diagnosed with brain cancer. We truly believe in the power of prayer. Let us unite in prayer for her and for the entire family as they begin a challenging journey. Thank you. Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold. Up or down, this way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation. One way or the other.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Here we are sitting in the middle of the prairie at Annunciation Parish in beautiful Homer Glen, Illinois. And with me is Father Tom Loya. Father Tom, please tell us about Prairie Fest.
This is the 11th anniversary of Prairie Fest, which is a festival for the entire family where you'll enjoy music, a grand cash raffle with $15,000 in total prizes, a beer tent, animal shows, juggling, wine art, and more.
Prairie Fest kicks off Friday, August 10th at 5 p.m. with music by Echo and Duransom. Next at 7:30, enjoy longtime Chicagoland favorites M&R Rush. Saturday, August 11th, is Family Day, starting at noon with kids' games, animal shows, juggling, and much, much more. The music kicks off with Common Allies at 4:30. Next, at 7:30, enjoy the Hat Guys. Sunday, August 12th, is Polka Day. Starting at 11 a.m., prepare to polka with the Polka Generations Band.
While you're enjoying all of this music, food, and fun, take a guided tour of this beautiful prairie and experience the church's breathtaking interior during the Annunciation Parish Church Tours.
Only a $5 cover for those 14 and up. $3 cover for those 3 through 13. $5 for on-premises parking each day, or free shuttle from the remote lot.
For early registration discount for the Wine Art Studio and event schedule, visit ByzantineCatholic.com. That's ByzantineCatholic.com.
Prairie Fest, Friday through Sunday, August 10th through the 12th at Annunciation Parish, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coy's here with you. I'm trying to reap some wisdom from the pages of history. Where we last left off, we left our heroes, the early Jesuits, who were being slapped around by royalty and eventually even the Pope, Pope Clement XIV. Remember that? Sometimes Pope Clement XIV is referred to as, they thought he would be the last pope. They thought he would be the last pope. But he wasn't. And it was after Pope Clement. Then we have, let me see here, look at my notes, Pope Pius VI really went to the Jesuits' defense, although he didn't get him unsuppressed. Then Pope Pius the VII does get them unsuppressed, but poor Pope Pius the XI, in the process of doing so, angered the good old French soldier, a little guy by the name of Napoleon, got him so mad that he's thrown in jail in France. The Pope was arrested and thrown in jail. This was all part of the scheme. Such an important thing to realize is, as we analyze the suppression of the Jesuits, it's important to see that those who were trying to suppress the Jesuits were also trying to, in the long run, suppress Catholicism, do away with Catholicism. Even those who wanted to keep Catholicism wanted to destroy Catholicism. Okay, now that sounds like a contradiction, but I'm going to explain. They wanted to destroy Catholicism while keeping Catholicism. They wanted to make Catholicism their own puppet, shall we say. All of the reigning monarchs who were against the Jesuits were following the example of King Henry VIII by making a national church. Even the ones who didn't want to get rid of the Mass, they didn't want to get rid of the priesthood and celibacy, they didn't want to get rid of all seven sacraments, they liked the holy water and they liked smoke, I guess, and all the rest, incense. But they didn't like the idea that there was a power that they had to answer to, they meaning the kings and queens and noblemen. And so they wanted to transform Catholicism into a state church, which is what I mean by saying you're destroying Catholicism, because Catholicism in its heart and soul, in its essence, can't belong to one state. It has to be universal. It has to be international, as it were. So, our hour's coming back. Let me finish the words of Cardinal Beaumont against Pope Clement XIV. He's admonishing the Pope for his efforts to do away with these strong teachers of the faith. And he says that they're putting an end to the wrong kind of peace, because that's key phrase on the part of Cardinal Beaumont, because the phrase that all the monarchs used, especially even the king of Spain, where St. Ignatius of Loyola came from, Charles III, King Charles III, who was of French heritage, because he was the grandson of King Louis the 14th, the king just right previous to the reigning king, King Louis the 15th there. So he was a Frenchman ruling in Spain, and he kept on saying, I'm going to kick out the Jesuits. And when the Jesuits asked why, all the king could say is, for the peace of the realm. For the peace, it's for peace sake, and the deeper reasons are kept within my heart. He famously refused to explain, so to speak, the charges. You can see why it's so crucial as a part of legalese and part of a good just society, that when you jail somebody, you have to tell them what you're accusing them or what they're being charged with. If there are no charges, then you let me go. In essence, King Charles III of Spain, as well as King Louis the 15th in France, as well as King Charles III of Portugal, he was the other big character in the story. So they were all saying, well, we can't give you, the reason we're doing this is for peace. And so Cardinal Beaumont wisely uses that phrase to say it's the wrong kind of peace. We have to see what true peace is. It's reminiscent of the Lord saying, of course, I give you a peace that the world cannot give. So Cardinal Beaumont, let me read a little bit further. By their zeal and eloquence, the Jesuits, that is, they have striven to block every avenue of approach by which this false peace might enter and rend the bosom of the church. They have set the souls of men free from its thraldom, and they have pursued it to its innermost lair, making light of its danger and expecting no other reward for their daring than the hatred of the licentious and the persecution of the ungodly. Those words are, I can't tell you, my friends, how close those words are to the words that I used in my American Civil War play regarding two perspectives on slavery, one by a Southern Catholic bishop from Virginia, Bishop Faroe, versus a bishop from Cincinnati, Bishop Purcell, who was defending Lincoln during the American Civil War, because he was the one defending Lincoln, saying, yes, they're fighting, yes, they're killing people, but they're trying to establish a greater peace. We're trying to make real peace, not false peace. And obviously, when we think of this American Civil War, we think of the peace that is bought through slavery. Just can't get around it. That's why there's something in that sticks in my groin when people who are so adamantly pro-choice try to think that they are maintaining the spirit of the Civil War by their just tearing down the statues of the Confederate soldiers or generals like Robert E. Lee or Jefferson Davis and the like. No heroes in my book in the sense that they were misguided, but they were sincerely fighting for what they thought was the right. But now, 150 years, 200 years later, we could see they were mistaken. Their sense of peace was bought. And so the fight was really a fight for a greater sense of peace. Now, we're getting close to the end, and I promised my friend Nick there that I would use Batman as an analogy for what was going on here in this Jesuit suppression, because the intellectuals of the day were forcing the royalty to sharpen their swords to destroy, in the words of Voltaire of the French Revolution era, destroy that infamous thing, that hideous thing named the papacy, named Catholicism. Go and destroy it. The intellectuals were explaining why they had to do that. Well, they did that, but what the royalty didn't realize is that the intellectuals of France would turn the sword on them. And as they chopped the head of the Pope off, well, not literally, but jailed him and were trying to kill Catholicism, they did chop the heads of many kings off and monarchy died. So there was a Batman episode. I'm going to have to come back to that, but there's a Batman episode that fits right in line. I'm Father Tom Coase. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred, the time is now.